It's time for Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. Call 532-2460.
Well, good morning and welcome to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Republican Congressman Tom McClintock is joining us in the studio today. We are recording midweek, and he just attended a business roundtable event in Tuolumne County. So, Congressman, it's great to have you back on Motherlode Views.
Great to be back. Thanks for having me.
So the roundtable event that you were at, what can you tell us about that?
Well, it was just a chance to meet with a lot of the business owners in the local community and exchange ideas and views on all things related to the economy here. I was very gratified to hear the tax cuts that we enacted last year now being felt by people as they're filling out their taxes. They've got a little more room in their budgets now. They're expecting a few more customers in their shops as a result. I remember the Reagan recovery. That was prompted by the Reagan tax cuts that took effect in 1983. And within a year of their taking effect, Reagan started running ads, "It's morning in America." And those ads resonated because everybody could feel the change. The Trump tax cuts that were in our big, beautiful bill are Reaganomics on steroids, and I think people are starting to feel that in their daily lives now. I think that by summer, it's going to be morning in America.
Yeah, how would you kind of assess the state of the economy right now in your district? Are you pretty optimistic?
Well, you can't spin the economy. Everybody knows in their own lives exactly how it's doing, and obviously people are still struggling. I think we're now on the cusp of having those tax cuts make a big difference in people's lives. So I expect over the next few months people are feeling a great sense of relief. Obviously, we have to get past this Iran crisis. It's driven up the price of oil, but with the brittle ceasefire that was announced today, the price of oil on the international market dropped $18 per barrel literally instantly. It's one of the biggest drops ever recorded in the price of oil. That translates by itself to about a $1 reduction in gasoline at the pump. And that's just the beginning. I think that this crisis will be behind us within hopefully the next few weeks. Strait of Hormuz will be reopened. And then economists are predicting prices in the range of $40 to $60 a barrel, about half of what they were at the peak of this crisis.
Yeah, Iran has been the big story internationally over the past couple of weeks. How do you feel the administration has been handling that situation?
Well, first, I don't think they had a choice, and I think they did act within their constitutional authority. I mean, essentially what happened was the Israelis had determined that the window was closing on their ability to control Iran's acquisition of nuclear arms. We did utterly destroy their production facilities, but they were bragging they still had enough for 11 Hiroshima-sized bombs, and obviously they also had the ballistic missile capability to deliver them anywhere in Europe. And they vowed from the very outset that once acquired, they will use those weapons. Worse than that, they were ramping up their missile production at an alarming rate. Iran was producing 400 drones a day. And the Israelis were had calculated they didn't have much more time to act before this became unstoppable. So they notified us they were going to act. Our intelligence reported that Iran had very extensive plans in the event of an Israeli attack to launch a retaliatory first strike, massive, against American bases throughout the Middle East, possibly killing thousands and thousands of U.S. servicemen. He wasn't willing to allow that to happen, so he decided to strike first. Now, under the War Powers Act, he has 60 days to conduct this operation. So far, in the 31 days that have elapsed, we have utterly destroyed their Navy. We've utterly destroyed their Air Force. Their Army is disbanded. I mean, we've getting reports of military sites across the country that are simply abandoned. We've taken out the top two or three tiers of their leadership, and we've destroyed their missile capability by about two-thirds. Obviously, it's not over yet. But I am confident that we have so crippled this regime that it's going to fall to internal resistance fairly soon. I mean, MEK alone has about 20,000 resistance cells organized throughout the country in 31 provinces, and that's just one group. Then you've got the Kurdish militia in the Kurdistan regions, and I think at some point in the very near future, you're going to see resistance well up and bring down this regime.
Back to the issue of the economy, you mentioned the Big Beautiful Bill. What's kind of next when it comes to policies? Are there other things you'd like to see done to improve the health of the national economy?
Oh, yes, of course. We have to continue the attack on fraud that this administration has begun. I mean, you've been seeing some of the appalling stories out of Minnesota and now California. It was just reported that just hospice fraud in Los Angeles is a multi-billion dollar industry. They calculated one fraudster was billing at a rate where he would have had to have seen one hospice patient every 7 seconds, 365 days a year, to justify what he was stealing because the state of California was asleep at the switch. Newsom's bragged that he's closed down four hospice centers for fraud over the last 4 years. The Department of Justice just shut down 231 of them overnight because of this massive fraud. You've seen what was going on in Minnesota. The Medicaid fraud in California is now estimated to utterly eclipse everything that we've seen in Minnesota. And in Minnesota, it was quite deliberate. I don't know about California yet. I think we're going to find out. But we have audio recording of Keith Ellison, the Democratic Attorney General, radical leftist, meeting with these fraudsters, and they were all complimenting each other on how they had each other's backs. Whistleblowers who report that they had brought this to both the attention of the Tim Walz administration in Minnesota as well as the Biden administration. You had TSA officers that were literally watching people move millions of dollars in cash in their travel luggage, reported that, and couldn't get anybody to act. Well, this administration is acting. That is going to be one of the top priorities. This has turned into a kleptocracy that is literally costing Americans billions of dollars. And a lot of it flowing through, you know, groups like the Somali community.
Is that issue something just kind of for the Justice Department to focus on, or will Congress get involved with any type of legislation?
Well, I think Congress is going to be looking at all of these programs and how to tighten them up so that this can't happen in the future. I mean, we've already begun that with the Big Beautiful Bill. We put in work requirements, restored work requirements, for both SNAP beneficiaries and Medicaid beneficiaries. You know, you heard about all of these cuts we made to Medicaid. Medicaid benefits didn't drop a dime. What happened was we said if you're here in the country illegally, you're not entitled to Medicaid. Period. You have to recertify your eligibility every 6 months. And here's the kicker. If you're able-bodied and an adult and you want to collect these benefits, fine. But we're going to ask you to work part-time or at least look for part-time work or at least spend part of your time training to look for part-time work, but you have to put at least half the effort into that, as every tax-paying family is putting in every day to pay the taxes to support these programs. We actually had such provisions in law back during the Clinton administration, and they worked. They brought a 56% reduction in use of these programs because people decided to go back to work. We're starting to see the labor participation rate inch upward again. I think that's a good sign, and I think it's a direct reaction to the reforms we put into place, but we have to extend those throughout all of the entitlement programs. And then we've got the major elephant in the room, and that's the federal debt. We ran last year close to $2 trillion of deficit. What that means is that virtually the entire federal government, everything we think of as the federal government, all the departments, all the appropriations bills that we pass every year, that's about $2 trillion a year. The other $4 trillion we spend is entitlement spending. So in a way, you can say that the entire federal government now is financed by borrowed money. That has to be brought under control. Now, we've seen under this administration about a 12% reduction in the federal workforce. That's a huge step forward. We're going to need to see a lot more. But ultimately, the spending's got to be brought under control. The fraud and the entitlement reform is going to be a big part of that.
Need to take a quick break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherlode Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our second segment in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
Welcome back to Motherlode Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. We're talking about regional and federal issues with California Congressman Tom McClintock, a Republican who's joining us in studio in Sonora today. Congressman McClintock, you were talking about a number of entitlement programs and some concerns that you have. How about Social Security? That's another one that a lot of people rely on. How would you kind of describe the current state of Social Security?
That's a huge one. And as you know, it's expected to run out of money by 2035. That's going to mean an across-the-board reduction in Social Security benefits of about 20%. I'm at that age now where that has my full attention as well. And so they're basically the three knobs you can turn. You can either raise taxes, which is very harmful to the economy. You can reduce benefits, which would be a slap in the face of every person who's spent their entire lifetime working and paying into that fund on the promise that money would be there for them. Or you can do what they did during the Reagan administration, the last time we ran into very serious difficulty with Social Security, and that is to recognize that people are living longer, they're more productive longer, and we need to raise the retirement age for those who are entering the workforce, maintaining benefits for those who are at or near retirement. So you've got to preserve it for those who spent their entire lives planning on that money to be there, making investment decisions, planning that would be part of their retirement. You can't pull the rug out from under those folks. But for those who are just entering the workforce and have 40 or 50 years to adjust and have much longer life expectancy and much longer productivity expected, that's where I think you can make the most equitable adjustment that will maintain the system for those who depend on it.
You've talked about forestry issues a lot on the show in the past. What are kind of the latest developments when it comes to forest bills?
Still waiting for the Senate to pass the Fix Our Forest Act. We've talked a lot about this, BJ, over the years, and the success we've had in the Tahoe Basin by cutting red tape with the National Environmental Policies Act restore health to the forest in the Tahoe Basin. And that's done just by a categorical exclusion that takes the review time from about 5.5 years for these forest thinning projects down to a few months, takes the reports from about 800 plus pages down to a few dozen. It's increased the timber yield in the Tahoe Basin from 1 million board feet a year to 9 million board feet a year. It's tripled the amount of treated acreage. It's what saved the city of South Lake Tahoe from the Caldor fire. The fire hit a tract that had been treated under that authority. It lay down and the firefighters were able to put it out. We desperately need to extend that policy throughout the entire forest system. I've been working on this for many years. We got it into the Fix Our Forest Act. That passed the House last year. It's being held up in the Senate right now, although I am told that there are negotiations going on, and hopefully that will move forward. We also have the same provisions, by the way. I was able to get those into the Farm Bill, which is still in the House, but that is must-pass legislation. And we were also able to get into the same bill, my Tamarack Fire Bill, I call it. It's a bill that I introduced after the Tamarack Fire. You remember the situation there. We had a lightning strike in Alpine County. A fire smoldered on about a quarter acre for 10 days. The Forest Service knew about it, flew a helicopter over it every day to take pictures for Facebook, but never bothered to drop a bucket of water on it to put the damn thing out. 10th day, it exploded out of control and destroyed 30,000 acres. This Tamarack Fire Bill simply says you spot a fire, you put it out immediately, and you can't prohibit anybody else from putting it out. That was another problem with the Tamarack Fire, is local fire departments responded to put the fire out, and they were told to stand down by the Forest Service. That will be impossible under the legislation that we also have in the Farm Bill. bill. So we'll see how that goes. But that is something that's got to pass. And I'm hopeful that those provisions will remain in it as it goes through the process.
I saw there was a recent restructuring, too, of the U.S. Forest Service. I don't know too much about that, but what was your reaction?
I think it's very, very favorable. Among other things, they're moving the regional headquarters from Vallejo to Placerville so that they'll actually be living in the Sierra that they need to manage and be a lot closer to the issues.
Just having people closer to the decision-making process,
yes,
or the
yes,
issues in
yes, and also you
states.
Won't have all these bureaucrats commuting back and forth to come here. They'll actually be living here and working here.
What are your top priorities right now when it comes to water and legislation?
Well, it's same as we've been working on for many years, and that is the same environmental laws that have prevented us from managing our forests also prevent us from building new reservoirs and aqueducts. We have not built a major reservoir in California since 1979 when New Melones opened. Meanwhile, the population has literally doubled. One thing I've learned is that droughts are nature's fault. They happen, but water shortages are our fault. That's a choice we made when we decided a generation ago to enact all of these so-called environmental laws, which have made new dam construction impossible. The result is we've got about the same amount of water storage as we had 50 years ago with more than twice the population. So now we are living in this ironic condition of being in one of the most water-rich regions of the country and yet facing chronic water shortages. We've got to build more dams, we have to cut through the laws that are preventing those new dams from being constructed. I can't tell you that we're making a lot of progress on it, mainly because of state restrictions. For example, the Auburn Dam. We have a very receptive administration right now. They have modified the biological opinions that have prevented good water management throughout the San Joaquin Valley. But the fundamental problem is we have a state government that is adamantly opposed to the construction of any new dams. In fact, quite the contrary. They're using our water bond money to tear down perfectly good dams. They just destroyed four dams on the Klamath River because they're offensive to their environmental sensibilities. At some point we've got to recognize two things. Number one, human needs are just as important. And number two, dams are not an environmental blight. They are an environmental blessing. They protect riparian habitats from both droughts and floods. They stabilize the water flow. There's nothing more damaging to a riparian habitat than a flood that blows out the habitat or a drought which dries it up. The dams actually make it possible for year-round water flows, and yet for using the environment as an excuse, they're now tearing these dams down. That's insane, and it's counterproductive.
As we sit and talk here in mid-April, we don't know what's going to happen with the midterm elections. Is there any sense of urgency right now for Republicans to try to get as much done as you can just with the uncertainty next year?
I'm very optimistic about next year. I realize that runs against the historical record, and it runs against the current conventional wisdom. But as I said, I remember the Reagan recovery. It was delayed for 2 years. The tax cuts were delayed for 2 years. And during those 2 years, people were dealing with the Carter economy, which was that period of malaise that we remember so vividly. And so the Republicans took a drubbing in the midterm elections. The third year, they took effect in 1983. And within a year, they had worked their way through the economy, and it was a completely different environment then. People could actually feel the improvement in the economy. It was an amazing time. Reagan started running these ads, "It's morning in America," and they resonated because that's what was happening in people's lives. Well, the big, beautiful bill that we passed last July is Reaganomics on steroids. It has time to take effect, and I believe that by some summer we're going to be in a very different political environment because we're going to be in a very different economic environment. It's going to be morning in America. And at that point, I think we'll be asking the same question that has been decisive in so many previous elections. Are you better off today than you were 2 years ago? You can't spin the answer to that question. People know what's going on in their own lives. I think it's going to be a very affirmative answer. The other question that's going to be asked, which is also important, is do you really want to let the Democrats back in to reopen our borders? We've had enormous success in securing our borders, illegal crossings down 97%. We've had the deportations, over 500,000 illegal aliens with criminal records. Have been removed from this country under this administration. And guess what? Crime is now plummeting. We're at the lowest homicide rate in over 100 years. We've seen the sharpest drop in violent crime ever recorded. It turns out if you remove violent criminals from the streets, you have less violent crime. And that's what's been going on. The question is, do you want to reopen our borders and let these violent cartels and criminals back into our country? I think the answer is going to be self-evident. And so I am actually very optimistic for Republican chances in the midterm elections, despite history and despite the current polls.
We need to take one more break. We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherload Views. I'm BJ Hansen, your host. Motherload Views is brought to you by Nate's Tree Service. No job is too big or too small. We'll have our final segment in just a minute.
Nate's Tree Service does more than trim trees. Nate's will remove tree hazards, clean storm damage, provide CDF fire clearance, eliminate beetle infestation, chip brush, and so much more. Nate's Tree Service is licensed, bonded, and insured. They even carry workers' comp for their employees for your protection. No job is too big or too small in the Tri-County area for family-owned and operated Nate's Tree Service. Call 532-2460. That's 532-2460.
We're talking with Congressman Tom McClintock on this weekend's Motherload Views, joining us in studio in Sonora today. Congressman McClintock, you were talking about immigration at the end of the last segment. I saw that you authored a bill called the Shutdown Sanctuary Policies
Yes.
Act. What can you tell us about that?
Very excited about that. It was passed out of the House Judiciary Committee. We have to bring it to the House floor. We still are involved in negotiations to be sure that we can get it off of the floor. But essentially what it does is to preempt state sanctuary laws and allow local governments to cooperate directly with the federal government, notwithstanding those laws. You know, I meet regularly with the county sheriffs, and at our last meeting, every county sheriff who was present told me the same thing. They desperately want to cooperate with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They desperately want to get these criminals out of their communities, but they're forbidden by state law from doing so. They have to release these criminals back onto the streets once they're taken into custody, even though federal law requires that they be turned over to federal enforcement for deportation. This bill will set that right, and then it will take the federal law enforcement funds that are going to jurisdictions that refuse to enforce our federal laws and rerouting them instead to those communities that are working to enforce them. Just outside of this district, Tulare County Sheriff testified to our immigration subcommittee this year that literally half of the crime that he's dealing with is illegal immigration. A lot of it organized cartels. We just had a major drug bust in this region, all cartel related. That's why enforcing these laws is so important. That's and that's why the sanctuary policies that are preventing that enforcement need to be pushed aside.
Do you think there would ever come time, any time down the road soon, where there could be some type of bipartisan compromise in immigration, or are the two parties kind of on different tracks right now?
Well, at the moment, they're on very different tracks. The Democrats have made it very clear they want to reopen the borders. That's behind their whole shutdown of the Department of Homeland Security. They want us to stop enforcing a federal immigration law. And that's very clear in the demands they're making. Among those demands is that you can only take an illegal into custody with a judicial warrant. Well, deportation is not a punishment, and it's not a civil matter, not a criminal matter. There is no judicial warrant available. So by demanding judicial warrants, they're making it impossible for federal authorities to take these people into custody and remove them. That's their objective. They know that. And then that's an insoluble difference between the two parties. And that's why I think, again, the midterms are going to be also decided upon that question. Do you want to reopen our borders? I think the answer for most people is going to be no. We kind of like the fact that working wages are again growing. We saw them shrink under the Biden administration as we flooded the labor market with cheap illegal labor. That's now reversed itself. We've had 3 million illegals either self-deport or be forcibly deported. That's improving the job market for Americans. It's dramatically lowering the crime rates. Not to mention the relief on our public hospitals, our public schools, our homeless shelters and food pantries, all of which had been completely overwhelmed by the largest illegal mass migration in history. It shouldn't surprise us that having gone through that period and having between 10 and 20 million illegal aliens allowed into this country in contravention of our laws, that has to be followed by the largest legal deportation in our history. That's what's going on right now. That's what the Democrats are fighting, and that's going to be ultimately up to the American people to resolve at the ballot box.
Another issue that's kind of getting some national attention is what and if there should be new regulations on artificial intelligence. How do you fall in on that issue?
I think artificial intelligence is one of the most promising breakthroughs for humanity that's ever been recorded. I think it's going to ultimately eclipse the internet. It's going to ultimately eclipse the printing press and its positive impact on the human experience. We're talking about being able to accelerate productivity dramatically, and that lifts all boats. You know, people are saying, oh, well, it's going to cause unemployment. Well, the steam shovel put a lot of ditch diggers out of work, but it didn't cause unemployment. It made people more productive and more prosperous. And that's what artificial intelligence promises for the future. I mean, breakthroughs in cancer therapies, for example, just a cornucopia of good can come of this. But we're finding the left fighting it. And I find that absolutely impossible to understand. This could be a quantum leap for mankind. And all it requires is electricity. And, of course, that's what the left is fighting. The most promising forms of electricity generation, nuclear power, hydroelectric power, fossil fuels. The left has been waging war against these for years, and the result is in places like California, where they have prevailed, sky-high electricity prices and constant shortages of electricity. Well, we can't continue down that road if we're going to enjoy the quantum leap in prosperity, productivity that artificial intelligence offers us.
Got about just a minute left. Any other comments you'd like to make on today's show as we wrap up?
Yeah, just go back to the constant theme of humanity. It can be summed up in four words. Freedom rocks, socialism sucks. And we can see that all around us. Wherever the left is taking control, you see the same social and economic pathologies. They've ruined our greatest cities. They've ruined states like California. Freedom works, and it's time we put it back to work. And I think that's the fundamental question that we're all grappling with as a society.
Congressman McClintock, thank you for your time today.
My pleasure. BJ, thanks for having me.
We thank Congressman Tom McClintock for joining us on this weekend's Motherlode Views. That was recorded earlier in the week while he was in Sonora at a business roundtable that took place in the community where he spoke with local business leaders. A programming note, next week on Motherlode Views, it's that annual time of the year where we're getting ready for the Motherlode Roundup. We're going to have members of the Tuolumne County Sheriff's Posse coming into the studio to get us up to speed on all the various community events that are going to be taking place in the weeks ahead. Of course, in early May is when the Motherlode Roundup takes place. There's the big parade on Saturday, and several build-up events such as the band review, also the Queen coronation, and then the two-day rodeo on Saturday and Sunday. So we're going to have some Sheriff's Posse members coming in next week to tell us all about this year's event. That's next week on Motherlode Views. We'll see you then.
You've been listening to Motherlode Views, a look at the issues important to the quality of life in the Motherlode. Motherlode Views has been brought to you by Nate's Tree Service, where no job is too big or too small. call 532-2460.